702 and Cape Talk.
Talking Sex.
Hello, Dr. Eve.
Hi, Eusebius. Nice to be with you again.
How are you?
Yeah, I missed you last week, actually, huh?
I missed you too. But I did want to send you the podcast and I forgot because although I missed you, and it's not a but, I missed you full stop. I actually thought, wow, I wish you could hear the conversation. We had the most hilarious, informative, productive conversation with people, particularly over the ages of 60, telling us young ones to stop thinking that it's the end of your sexual life at 40 or at 50. Once you are over your early or your actual midlife crisis and the kids are out of the house, you've got all the time in the world to get back to what you were like in your 20s. It was really, really beautiful.
Well, I heard about you, and I did hear about it. I did. Not only through Twitter, but because I had clients, you know, coming to my room, and I had people on the street saying to me, this was the most fantastic show. And I thought, my goodness, your series is doing me out of a job.
Never. You are indispensable, darling.
No, but I seriously did hear that it was fun and absolutely fantastic. And especially younger people were saying this was so, not only enlightening, but hopeful for them. So well done.
That's right, friend.
Yeah, fabulous.
Thank you. I was hoping you'd ask me how I am today.
Tell me how you are, please.
I'm not great. I've got fake energy a little bit. And because you and I love each other, I can be authentic with you. And I tell you why, and I know that you care about it before we get to the main topic.
I know why, but you tell me. I'm imagining why.
It's three different things. If you put them together, you get it. It's firstly this horror of what happened at Dross.
Yeah.
Including this national debate this morning about whether there's something interesting that the man was white, not black. Then there is the story we haven't spoken about nationally much, which is a teenage mom that was raped by a doctor who pretended to be a doctor but wasn't a doctor doing the rounds at a maternity ward in the Eastern Cape. And then, of course, there was this global horror last night.
Right.
And as you rightly say on Twitter, a whole performance of toxic masculinities, not just from this man, Kavanaugh himself, but also the likes of Lindsey Graham, who was probably the worst amongst those Republican senators. And you put all of that together, and it just leaves you fatigued.
Yeah, you know, I kind of am on the same page as
and
you.
And yet at the same time, I know the limits of being fatigued and saying that you are fatigued. And you and I as professionals, we are first human beings, so we are as entitled to fatigue as our listeners. But of course, we also need to then facilitate the productive conversation about this stuff.
Yeah, but because of your honesty, Eusebius, people are able to work with you and interact with you. So I again congratulate you on that. I'm being very authentic. There's nothing fake about your energy, sweetie. Your authenticity around this enables people to be as sad and as horrified as what you facilitate and give the platform for people to do this.
So I appreciate that. I really do. But now today's topic, you've set a challenge for yourself because you want to make something sexy that many people think of as unsexy.
I know, I do. So we're kind of talking about life. We're steeped in death right now, the death of Thanatos to Eros, really, the death of emotion and energy because of how people are using violence and power in situations. And here we have a situation where people are so very desperate and so traumatized around life and wanting a baby, wanting the life of a baby. Infertility is definitely one of the largest life traumas that people or couples do experience, or even families, communities do experience because of the expectation that we have around babies and having babies and the pressure that that puts couples under to have this. I wanted to talk about this because I had the privilege of being a speaker at Cape Fertility here in Cape Town a few months ago, which is an incredible institution, kind of getting a small window into the amazing work that they do with assistive reproductive technology to get couples to do want to have babies, to be able to have babies. Not all of them, not all the time. And as my research shows, that, you know, quite astounding actually, that almost 40% of people who do have ART still cannot conceive. This is a huge desire for people to normalize people, reproductive instinct, urges, whatever it is. And what we're going to be looking at today is the difficulty of conception and the difficulty of infertility and bringing in some what I call infertility hacks to get people to be a little more optimistic in either accepting that there is infertility or accepting that sexuality is kind of dead and off the table. If you think about how much we talk about trauma on the show and what happens to the brain during trauma, then then one understands that one doesn't feel sexy at that time, and yet you are needed to be sexually very functional at a time when you're just not feeling sexy. So how do we get ourselves to be feeling that way? There are two parts to the lack of sexuality that people experience with infertility, and I'm keen for our listeners to share which kind of camp that they fall into. Either you're in the camp where you have a sexual dysfunction, and we'll talk about what those would be, and therefore are not able to conceive, or else you are very sexually functional and find that you are infertile for various reasons. And because of that infertility treatment that you go through, you then develop sexual dysfunction. So which camp are you in? Or maybe, you know, you're kind of in both of them, because one of my infertility hacks is that if you are struggling with a sexual dysfunction, go and get treatment with a sex therapist before you go for ARTs. And I feel so strongly about this. This was, you know, my message is that because if we know how couples live together with very little time together, very little investment in time, also because more and more aging women are falling pregnant, wanting to fall pregnant. Women are getting married much later in life. Women are wanting to conceive much later in life, as do the people that they're involved with. Yeah. We also have situations where there are trans women, there are single women who are wanting to have children, where there are couples who are two men together who are wanting to have babies. So we've got this wonderful variety and diversity of people who are seeking conception and turning to ARTs first. For many people, you do have to, but for many people, you don't have to. And I'm really resistant to healthcare providers not doing the work of a proper history take and saying to a couple, go to a therapist and have the sex that you need to have before you go through the infertility. But people are lazy and people are rich and they go for ART.
Dr. Eve, out of interest, when you emphasizing the importance of doing that kind of work before you go to assistive reproductive techniques to help you conceive, is there why do you say that? Is it because actually there's a massive underdiagnosis, for lack of a better word, that actually sometimes a lot of these challenges in the relationship can be dealt with more appropriately from the point of view of other aspects of sexuality?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you see, because these healthcare, I'm a healthcare provider, and I'm very open when I go and talk to healthcare providers that there is such a discomfort around talking about sexuality that they don't do a sexual history take. It's like, okay, you know, we can't have a baby, or we've tried for the year, because that's what the golden rule is, try for a year, whatever that means, and then we will help you. But how many of you, and there's a challenge to healthcare providers, are actually spending time with a couple to find out, is there a sexual dysfunction? Is there just not enough frequent sexuality that's actually happening before you put them through a process which is going to be so disruptive and traumatic, not only to their lives, but to their sexual lives, and not only in that moment, but going forward, which is what the research shows, that straight, even if they fall pregnant, even if they have a baby, they never regain that rhythm that they had beforehand. And I think it's absolutely responsible of a healthcare provider to work with a couple beforehand and say, have you explored sex therapy? Have you explored relationship therapy? If you look at the research, you know, why aren't people having sex generally? It's because we don't have time. We're not intimate. We don't enjoy the sex. So let's just go and get some ART done, and then we don't have to worry about actually having sex. And as I write in my blog, all you're going to end up is pregnant and still in the same really crappy relationship.
Absolutely. Give us a call and tell us whether Dr. Eve is perhaps describing your life. And I'd love to know what your conversations were like with a healthcare provider that did begin a conversation with you about using assistive reproductive techniques. And I'd be very curious, even if it's anecdotal, to know whether they were even asking questions about the state of your sex life and your relationship. 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Any questions for Dr. Eve, do give us a call. Also, want to widen the conversation. We're going to take our first break here. I think the other conversation here that is obviously implicit is our attitudes towards infertility in general, and the pressures, the social pressures that the ultimate expression of intimacy is to fall pregnant. I wonder how many of you are listening to this conversation are genuinely desiring of conceiving And how many of you feel that without that, there's something sort of lacking and missing in terms of expressing the intimacy and the connection between you and your partner? 011-883-0702. Questions and stories about sexual dysfunction and infertility. And if you're in Cape Town, 021-446-0567. And of course, you can also, as always, leave us your questions or your stories on the WhatsApp number.
702 and Cape Talk.
Talking Sex.
And today we're focusing on sexual dysfunction and infertility and a lot of interesting questions that we need to speak about. They're difficult, but maybe these are sources of enormous emotional and psychosexual challenges for you in your current relationship as you're trying to fall pregnant. And maybe you've been advised to use some ARTs, which of course refers to assisted reproductive techniques. We'll talk more about them in a second. And as Dr. Eve says in this blog entry, which you can go and read more quietly this afternoon if you haven't checked it out beyond this discussion, by going to dreve.co.za and then, you know, clicking on the blog entry. Consider a couple of questions, and here's some questions that we'd like you to consider and to respond to. Did you fall pregnant when you planned to do so? If you struggled to conceive, what were the reasons? And here's a critical question. How did you manage this trauma? Because that is what it is. How has your relationship been impacted? Those are just some of the questions we're still going to unravel this hour. We've got a couple of callers, Dr. Eve, mm-hmm. and men calling in particular, which I'm grateful for, because infertility is often implicitly seen as a woman's issue, mm-hmm. but it's a couple's issue. It's a human being issue. Simon, thank you for calling in. Welcome to the show.
Hi, you see, yes. I just want for the doctor to help me. You know, basically, I've got kids, and my wife has got kids before we got married. And she tied her tubes back in the day when she thought she was done with life. Then we got married. Now, yeah, struggling to conceive, even considering IVF. But because of this whole thing, you know, in our culture, in the black culture, when you are married, you feel like there has to be a child to bring the both of you together, you know. And at times when small things can just erupt to big fights, because of one, you'd think maybe I'm not productive, I'm not producing kids, or maybe those children that I believe to be having are not actually mine, you know, and it tends to bring a little bit of a stress. Mm. That is why we are actually considering IVF now.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Eve?
Yo, Simon, this is a heavy, heavy burden that you're carrying with you. Look, I hear you exhale. Thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that on radio. I'm not a medical doctor, and I'm here to talk about the psychosexual aspects of it. So I absolutely cannot give you advice around tying tubes and what the outcome of that is, whether she's going to get a good outcome around that or not. I know that it depends on the time, how long ago the tubes were tied, how old she was, what the state of her ovaries were before that, what they are now. There are lots of different issues that go around that, which you do need to talk to a healthcare provider about, because I find, as with any trauma, that if the less you know, the more anxious you are and the more traumatic that it feels. So I really would suggest that you go to a infertility specialist and find that out. What are the chances of that for her? What I do pick up on is that it has brought conflict, and has brought internal conflict to you as well as conflict to your relationship, right? Where you begin to, you are questioning yourself as a man, because this, you know, you see, this is where it hits so hard for men.
Yeah.
Whether they are the ones who have the infertility, and I think it's about 50% of men who in times of infertility are infertile and do have a difficulty with their sperm production or motility. And then you question yourself, you know, are your kids yours? And I want to say to you, before you go down this deep, dark hole of so much self-doubt and questioning around this very important thing, please, would you go and talk to a therapist and go to a couple therapist who can talk to you about masculinity and about your within your culture as well, and to make sure that the conflict with you and your wife does not continue around this, because it just sounds like you both need to, what my favorite expression is, hold me tighter. You need to be coming closer together rather than having this become divisive between the two of you. Simon,
how has this impacted the two of you? How has it impacted your relationship? Or was it a case of you two against family, community, and stereotypes out there? Are you united in your values and how you are seeing the situation that you're in? Or has it caused tension? How are you guys dealing with this?
No, between the two of us, we both feel like we do feel that we need to have this child. You understand? And sometimes it gets to a point where I'm one to think about something for a very long time, and if something bothers me, I sink into depression. So I get to be that depressed, one can't even get strong.
Exactly. I was just going to say that, Simon, that it's probably affecting your sexuality. So when you say you're not getting strong, I assume that you mean you're struggling even to get erect and to actually have penetration?
Yes, it's a struggle. Sometimes you just have to pop a Viagra to be strong, yeah.
Yeah, this is so typical of what happens to men during the infertility process of trying to conceive, that because, as I said, it's not sexy, so how do you get it sexy? And what I was saying to you, Sibis, earlier on is please go for counseling. I'm repeating it to you. Go for counseling before you move into ARTs, because you need to sort out the difficulty, the conflict, and for you not to slip into depression. And depression, as we know, automatically you're going to get erectile dysfunction, and then you go to your doctor, and your doctor's going to give you an antidepressant, and then it's going to take away your libido, going to delay your orgasm, and going to lead to erectile dysfunction. It spirals, Simon. So start at the top. Start at the top and get some counseling.
Thank you, Simon. Thanks so much for calling in. Karen, good morning.
Is that me?
Yes, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, I just wanted to talk about Klinefelter syndrome, and I don't know if Dr. Eve has ever heard about Klinefelter syndrome. This is where men are born, it's 1 in 500, quite a high number, of boys born XXY. They have an extra female chromosome, which makes them, 99% of them are 100% sterile. And the majority of these men only ever find out about this when they go for fertility treatment. Then they, it's all fall into place, and then they realize that all the other issues that they've had all their lives were due to Klinefelter syndrome. The treatment for it is testosterone therapy. They have to have it supplemented because they produce very little or no testosterone. They also produce absolutely no sperm.
Yeah. And what is your interest in this, Karen? Why are you raising it? It's very interesting. I've never heard of it myself, but I'm just wondering
Nobody's ever heard of it. We are the NPO for Klinefelter syndrome.
Oh, great.
And we'd like to increase awareness of this, because we have a kind of a support thing going and trying to get people to understand about it, trying to help people understand what the implications are and what they need to do about it. But quite often people only find out in the case of them going for fertility treatment. I mean, my partner is Klinefelter syndrome. I have my own children from a previous relationship, but his biggest heartbreak in life, and most of these Klinefelter guys, they desperately wanted to have children, mostly probably because of their extra X chromosome, which gives them kind of female characteristics, which makes them a little bit broody. Desperately, desperately wanted to have children, but were unable, completely unable to have children.
Thank you for sharing that as a resource. Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that to our attention, because we need as much support, people who are struggling with this, as possible. And here you've just opened another window for us into people who do have Klinefelter. Definitely. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Karen. I really do appreciate that. The desire to have a kid, it's interesting, because she says with this particular syndrome that you may feel that her partner may be particularly broody, and then that makes the inability to actually have a child that is genetically yours at any rate so much harder. That was a very interesting observation for me, because I always felt that the largest part of the psychosocial challenge when it comes to infertility is dealing with pressure from society as opposed to your innate desire.
Oh, it's such an instinctive biological urge for people to have, and I'm going to pick up on your word here, is genetic child. And with AOT, there's just so much creativity that's possible, actually, you see, because there's, for example, egg donors. I mean, that's like another whole topic that we could talk about. Mm. People who bring that in, do you consider that still to be your biological child, your genetic, isn't your genetic child, and what are the difficulties with that? And then it becomes difficult in terms of laws and who owns the child. You know, this is a whole industry on its own, which brings up so many difficulties for people. And imagine feeling sexy under these conditions. That's why I so appreciated Simon sharing, not feeling strong, affecting how it affects his sexuality, which will bring difficulty into the relationship.
So let's start this conversation then about ARTs. What are they?
Assisted reproductive techniques there's a variety of them. It would be what people call IVF, in vitro fertilization, where there are different ways of becoming pregnant. Either you're going to use your own sperm and your own ova, and you're going to put it into a little petri dish, and you're going to get it fertilized there and put it back into the woman. That would be one way, and then that's a very common way. And then you may not succeed the first time. May have to do it a number of times, and you've got to prepare the woman for that, so she's pumped full of hormones to be able to make herself as fertile as possible. And they go into a process of him having to provide sperm on demand when needed, with, you know, kind of a bit of porn and going to a bathroom. It's so unsexy, Eusebius. And then having to have this conception happening that way, and she's feeling unattractive and bloated, and they have to have this sex on demand. And so he's kind of called in the middle of his day to say, come home, perform, stick it in, let's have your sperm and let's make this baby happen during ovulation, or during a time when, you know, she needs to be, she's ripe for fertilization.
Yep.
So all the sexiness is taken out of it.
Okay, we're going to go to the EWN desk in a second, and then we'll take more of your calls. We're talking, if you've just joined us in today's segment of Talking Sex, about sexual dysfunction and infertility. Is this a challenge you're undergoing? How is it impacting you? How are you dealing with it, both as an individual, but also perhaps in the context of your relationship? And if you'd like some advice from Dr. Eve, give us a call, 021-446-0567 in Cape Town. Joe Burgers, we're taking your calls, 011-883-0702. And feel free alternatively to leave us a voice note. If you don't want to ask a question directly, you can just tell us your story. Remember, the WhatsApp number is 072-702-1702.
702 and Cape Talk.
Talking Sex.
27 minutes before noon, we're talking about infertility. How has this affected you? Any questions you might have for Dr. Eve? Give us a call on 011-883-0702 in Joburg, and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Dr. Eve, what are the biggest challenges that couples have when they have to deal with this? That earlier call for me was so fascinating. I mean, when the man said that, you know, his partner had, and I think his wording, I didn't want to interrupt him because I wanted to honor his openness speaking about it, but I don't know if you caught one particular phrase he used. He said she tied her tubes because she thought that her life was coming to an end.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite interesting to me what some of the social assumptions are that we make about not being able to, or choosing to not be able to have kids going forward.
Such a liberation. It's such a liberation that we were able to have contraception. In fact, today is World Abortion Day, I'm told.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So today we have so much more choice, and I think it's one of the choices of reproductive rights of women, that they can choose at some point in time to say, I don't want to be conceiving because I have met this biological urge. And I also just want to be really clear that I have no judgment against women who do choose not to meet that biological urge and consciously decide, I do not want to have children. This is your right as well. And because we have things like contraception today, it's fantastic that women have that ability to say, I just choose not to do it. So tying your tubes at any particular age is a decision that a woman has a right to make. And she says, okay, you know, I'm done. And then because we're living longer, and then because we are getting into our need is to keep connecting and having sexual relationships or intimate relationships, things change. And here we have a very strong, what I learned from Simon, a very strong cultural imperative.
Yeah.
We need to be proving that, you know, we are a family and kids will bring us together. I just have to share with you, I did a show on my TV show on Monday on Lobola. Phew, Eusebius, that was one of the most challenging experiences I've ever had. I said to my producer, why did you set this white girl up like this? And boy, was I trolled, was I beaten up. So I am very aware that, you know, there are cultural imperatives that have to be respected. And this is the pressure that they're under.
Well, I think they should be respected, but they should also be challenged. I mean, there is this, I often have this conversation with Karima, and she feels very strongly about it. There's this pressure on women, and I don't think it's specific to African cultures, that womanhood in part requires you to be a mom, that motherhood is an incredibly important part of that. And we don't have the same pressure as men. I mean, there are many men who desire to become a dad, but they aren't the same kind of social memes handed down in relation to fatherhood.
I think differently, hey?
Really?
I think for men it's about masculinity and sexuality and prowess and power and having to prove that. Having to prove that I am, by you being pregnant, it shows I can get erections and it shows that I'm fertile. Those are huge imperatives for men. And you're making me smile because I really cocked up on Women's Day. I sent out an image of a quote from somebody which was talking about how women are to be the mothers. It was Winnie Mandela. Winnie is, mothers of the nation. Oh, my goodness. You see this? I got these wonderfully young feminist women saying, all you think that we women are here for is just to procreate and just to conceive and just to have children. It's like, okay, I'm backing off of this Women's Month thing. Yeah. So there are different stories that are coming
I think you might be right. Yeah. I wouldn't disagree with you on that one. I think some men do feel that, and maybe also as part of a biological impulse. I suppose what I mean in part is that us men never get asked, so why do you not have a kid? Whereas if you are a woman who don't have a kid and you're getting on in your 30s, you're going to be told you better start popping before you are unable to. With men, there isn't the same kind of social discourse around get on with it.
There's an assumption that he is fertile and that the problem lies with the woman. And that's why it is even more traumatic, which, I would love to hear from men, around finding out that actually you are the reason. Because you have sperm that just doesn't work, or because, and let's come back to the topic, you have an erectile dysfunction, or you have something called Peyronie's disease, which is a curvature of the penis, which doesn't allow for penetration, or you have something called delayed orgasm or early ejaculation, and so early that you actually are not ever able to do a penis into vaginal penetration. And this is where the sexual dysfunction comes in and why people then go and get ARTs. And I'm saying go and speak to a sex therapist first who will be able to put you into a multidisciplinary team and make sure that you are sexually healthy or physically healthy, wherever the difficulty is, before you run off and go and get ARTs. So there are people who are struggling already sexually.
So if we're going to delay using ARTs as the solution, what does the research tell us are some of the typical reasons that people give for negative sexual responses that they have?
Because they're just too busy, not interested in being sexual. We have a look at some of the research, right? Because what I did was I gave research into fertile couples. This is a study of fertile couples. One-fifth of women age, and I know this is going to kind of defy what you did last week, age between 30 and 80 are unhappy with their sex lives. 17% only say they're satisfied. 10% of people are having sex once a week. 12% are once a month. 10% once a year. So many people are living sexless lives. Quarter of people are avoiding sex as they're too tired. 13% feel anxious. 11% lack intimacy with their partner. And 6% of partners have erectile dysfunction. That's a lot of dissatisfaction, a lot of sexual difficulty, and a lot of sexlessness that are happening in relationships. So that's going to be the problem.
Nelly, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. Thank you for calling in today. Go ahead.
So I was diagnosed with PCOS about a year ago and was told that I'm more than likely infertile. But I decided to sort of take that as a way of empowering myself. So I decided that that means that I get to sort of not think about my body purely as a baby-making machine and sort of own it sexually. And then through that, that's also meant that I've been able to make the decision that if I did want a family in the future, then I could rather go down the adoption route and give a child a family that really needs one rather than just sort of adding another child to the planet that's already sort of struggling with overpopulation.
So Nelly, you've got what's called polycystic ovary syndrome. For the listeners who are not really sure that, and there are many, many women who do have that, and that does lead to a difficulty in being fertile. And I'm hearing your very creative way of accepting that this is a situation and finding other ways, which there are today. You're mentioning adoption as a way of meeting that need.
We just lost Nelly there.
All right.
All the way from London, but thanks for calling in. I'm sure she might still be listening.
Yeah. So this is just because women's ovaries are not working. And so there are choices today, which is what we really are talking about. Do you also want to find a surrogate mother? You know, that's another choice that is there. A woman who will bear a baby for you and work out a way that you could have a child. And I was wanting to ask her, what has she done with her reproductive urge? Is she just finding a way to grieve about that or find a way to accept as she has, you know, I'm not going to be, you know, I can hear the justification. I don't need another child on this planet, which is fine. If that is what mentally makes her feel well, that's fine. This is, I say again, something really common with many, many women who struggle with this situation. Very difficult. Absolutely. For them.
18 minutes before noon. We're going to take more of your calls in a second. 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg. In Cape Town on 021-446-0567.
702 and Cape Talk.
Talking Sex.
Julie, good morning. Thank you so much for calling in.
Good morning, Eusebius. Good morning, Dr. Eve. Thank you for this very interesting conversation.
It's only a pleasure, Julie. What made you call in today?
Just responding with regards to what Dr. Eve was saying about the strain that this infertility can place on a relationship. My partner and I have been married for 2 years and trying for 3 years. And I must say, I'd just like to encourage people to talk to one another about these things. We'd be surprised at how many couples actually struggle with the very infertility we're discussing. I mean, if you go into the doctor's waiting rooms, it's amazing to see the degree, the variety of people that have experienced this infertility. And our infertility specifically is male factor infertility.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been now to two fertility clinics where after they put the man through a test called a semen analysis.
Mm-hmm.
At the first clinic, we received very poor results, and immediately the doctor just said, IVF, IVF, IVF. We were very deflated leaving that place because we simply didn't have the 74,000 odd that they were talking about. A year later, we were at a different fertility clinic, only to discover that the results had actually improved, a possibility the first doctor never gave us. And so it's made us candidates for a cheaper option, intrauterine insemination.
Mm.
But the doctors still push IVF, IVF, IVF.
Mm.
It really is deflating. And I encourage people, there are infertility forums out there. Many people are dealing with this. One surprising thing that we found when we would go to pick up our medication is just the places would run out because mm-hmm. there are that many people. So what I wanted to leave people with was when they say IVF, IVF, there are other options. You just need to be smart about it and do some research.
Hmm.
Julie, thank you for sharing with us. What impact has it had on your relationship and specifically on your sexuality?
Well, you know, initially we didn't know what it was. And I think everyone just sort of assumes that it's the woman's problem.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for us, I'm older than my partner by a few years, so it must be her. And people don't really get the men involved, but you'd be surprised how many men do suffer with the male factor.
Mm.
Also, we found it would take away the spontaneity of being intimate,
mm.
because then intercourse has to be timed for the ovulation periods of the women. It just has been very stressful, and, you know, we find that people unknowingly are insensitive when they ask you outright, why haven't you had children?
Mm.
Or just adopt. These are not easy options for many of us, mm. you know?
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, Julie, some of the suggestions that I have is to be able to motivate you as a couple to be sexual outside of those times. And I know people are saying that, you know, just make other sexual yes. time, not during that time. And it's probably difficult. Have you tried to yes. do that, to kind of bring in some porn, some sex toys, to designate non-fertility times to have sex?
Of course. Yeah. What we've learned to do 3 years in is really just not think about it. Otherwise, you do go mad. Mm. Otherwise, it's mechanical and you don't enjoy it. Mm. So we've just learned, we've thrown out the ovulation kits. I've stopped with the apps on your phone that you can have. And,
right.
and like you say, just be spontaneous about it and not try to time it, because the other way around really just... It messes with you big time.
It is. Yeah. It's your brain. And one of the things that you should do is be practicing mindfulness, which is accepting that this is a constant anxiety, worry, and a desire. And despite that, still be present in the moment with the experience. One of the pieces of research which I loved is that if a couple have novel and exciting non-sexual activities, just an experience that
great
you
mind,
have,
things are like, yeah, I was about to segue exactly
did
to
you
that.
Go like that one, huh?
Yeah,
okay,
you know why?
You
because it is, it's just really interesting. I mean, let's take an analogy here with fitness. Those of
yes.
us who are struggling with, you know, getting fit, sometimes habit is useful for the body and for relationships
mm-hmm.
because there's predictability.
Right.
But sometimes amazing things happen to the brain that
mm-hmm.
opens up creativity and excitement.
Exactly.
And new neural pathways that can be formed through novel experiences.
Absolutely. And what this piece of research says that if, as a couple, you do novel and exciting but non-sexual activities together, 36% of those couples are more likely to have sex that day. So Julie and all the other people are listening. That's the way to go, not to be spending more time fighting about it, not talking about it, keeping the pink elephant there, or trying to have sex that you really don't feel like having, except you just don't feel like having it. But go and have a different kind of experience, and then you may just feel like you're passionate thereafter.
The other golden thread throughout your work over the years remains a very important part of ways in which you can re-remember how to make yourself and your partner sexy. And that is conversation and dialogue, Dr. Eve. I mean, you discuss, for example, your second last bullet on the blog entry is around the importance of discussing what excites you sexually. And we often say this, and people think one is being PC when you professionals say this, the importance of the brain as your most important sexual organ and what dialogue can do, particularly when your relationship has stopped having a lot of conversation and language flowing between you and your partner.
Mm.
How critically important is that as a way of exciting you sexually? Just discussing what excites you.
Yeah, look, it doesn't happen. People just don't do it, which is why most people settle for porn and masturbation. It's always such an incredibly interesting experience for me in my therapy room when a couple will come in or somebody will come in on the inside, you know, just really don't have any desire to be sexual with my partner. It's causing a big relationship problem. And then after doing a sexual history take, it's this person is incredibly sexual by themselves with masturbation and porn. So one of the things around trauma, which is what we are talking about today, is there's something called trauma growth. And it's exactly what you're describing, that through trauma, through changing routine, through going through the trauma, because you can't keep doing the same routine, trauma disrupts that. There's so much potential for creativity and for growth that can happen. So when there is low risk, it's like we are so at the bottom of the barrel with our pain here around our worry and our anxiety around being infertile. You've got nothing to risk. Tell each other what you want sexually, you know. So you want it in the bum, you want it in the mouth, you want it with the latex. Just go for it. At least there's going to be an outcome of intimacy, and that will provoke and motivate you to really want to have some sexual activity that is required to have a baby.
Yes, Anonymous on the SMS line says the following. I'm going through a divorce, Dr. Eve, at the age of 32. My husband gave me flaky reasons, in my opinion, as to why he wants a divorce, but I think the real reason is that we don't have kids yet. I'm not infertile, as I've miscarried before last year of my marriage. But the last year of the marriage was also very abusive because of our lack of children, and it's causing enormous strain. It sounds to me like a couple that needs perhaps the therapeutic context as a process through which they can facilitate some of these issues.
It's quite heartbreaking for me that there is this abusiveness that's crept in because of something that could just maybe be medically sorted out or emotionally, psychologically be sorted out, and two people in enormous pain where he's gone into flight. You know, if she's saying it's a flaky reason, he just needs to get out the situation. It's like, let's get divorced because I just can't bear the feelings that I have been over here and feeling childless. And that's tragic for me. So definitely I'm going to agree with you. Therapy is what would be great if they could go and get some of that therapy. You know, maybe you just weren't having enough sex, and maybe there were issues in the relationship beforehand in any case. So, yeah, definitely therapy is going to be the place I'm always going to go to, in combination with other things. Even if you are having ARTs, please get some therapy to sustain yourselves for after the baby comes and being able to resume some kind of enjoyable, satisfying sexual life.
Beautiful. If you want to learn more, go to Dr. Eve's blog entry, dreve.co.za. Click on blog and you can read it there. Another critically important topic, this, Dr. Eve, very difficult for people to speak about as well. And thank you so much to everyone who had the courage to share their stories and to call in today. Thank you, Dr. Eve.
Thank you, sweetie. And let's hope that we all have an easier life where men are just going to not misuse and abuse their power with women and children. Have a good
Absolutely.
Weekend.
Absolutely. 7 minutes before noon.